Good morning, everyone. This is a real privilege to share with you some of our most recent results, and particularly some that are yet not yet published. Let's start with this view of Caribbean Sea and with this coral reef as a way to simplify the concept of symbiosis. And definitely, in the lab, we are interested in understanding the mechanism behind this symbiotic interaction with our gut microbiota. This is indeed a huge interest in several aspects. In the mean, you will have a link between changes in the gut microbiota with different disease, either with the nervous system, the joints, also the lung, and the pancreas, of course, but then those changes and the mechanisms that control shapes the composition of the gut microbiota remains far unknown, and we are just starting to understand some of these aspects that contribute to the pathogenesis of these disorders that are linked to changes in the gut microbiota. So I will use the term of dysbiosis that was referred yesterday as a change in the gut microbiota, but this doesn't mean that there is any functional consequence of these changes. So the main challenge now is to understand how these changes in the gut microbiota may contribute to disease. And one facet of aging is the risk of colorectal cancer. And here's some snapshots of gut microbiota analysis in colorectal cancer in patients. You will see here the gut microbiota composition of patients without colorectal cancer. Here you will see the composition here. It's a PCA analysis showing the difference in the composition of the gut microbiota from patients with colorectal cancer. And all people agree that there is indeed changes in the gut microbiota of these patients over time. And this is just one snapshot of the disease progressions. But this may suggest a link, at least a link, but this may suggest a contribution of these changes in gut microbiota to the disease risk. This is indeed worth noting that in patients with inflammatory bowel disease, inflammatory bowel disease remains a major risk for colorectal cancer. And you will see in these patients with inflammatory bowel disease, there is a premature aging of the gut microbiota in the sense that you have a decreased diversity in these patients with Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis. This is the two main forms of inflammatory bowel disease when compared to control, as shown here. The richness of in terms of genes, it's much lower, as mentioned yesterday by Dusko Erlich in these patients. But these patients is about affecting about 4 million of Europeans and Americans. It's clearly a problem, a health problem for our civilization in the sense that it affects mostly young adults, and there is no cure for this disease. The risk of colorectal cancer for these patients is about 2 if you make a meta-analysis of the risk of colorectal cancer all over the world is about a risk of 2. And it remains the major risk factor for this, for colorectal cancer. So we came with an hypothesis, basically, that some variations in the host genome may contribute to changes in the gut microbiota. And we asked the simple question whether is there any just a link between one single mutation in the host genome that may contribute to a change in the gut microbiota, and this change in the gut microbiota is indeed a risk factor for inflammation. So we are trying to dissect now this and to test this hypothesis. And to do so, we have generated, thanks to genome-wide association studies, where we have identified a mutation in the beta-laminin. And this single mutation in beta-laminin confers a risk to ulcerative colitis. And we decided with a group at the Institute EGBMC in Strasbourg, headed by Elisabeth Georges-Laouès, to generate a mutant in mice deleted for the integrin alpha 6. Alpha 6 integrin is the ligand for the beta-laminin. And we deleted this integrin only in intestinal epithelial cells, And what was the phenotype is we have increased proliferation, a risk of ulcerative colitis. 100% of the mice will develop ulcerative colitis in this context. And you have increased, this is the quantification of the increased proliferation. In these mice, you see a greater increase in the height of the glands in these mice. And basically, these phenotype become over time, and about at 6 weeks of age, 100% of these mice develop prolapsis and inflammation. So this is a fully penetrant disease model that and will allow us to have a prospective analysis of all the changes in the gut microbiota composition, all the crosstalks with the epithelial renewal, and basically what you see in observing this might you notice that they increase permeability in these animals using FITC dextran. You have an increased FITC dextran that we found in the systemic at the systemic level after gavage of FITC in these mice, and basically you will see you have a shedding of the epithelia, and basically that will be subsequent to an increased infiltration of immune cells in these animals. We noticed also several alterations in the composition of the mucus, as shown here, but also in several components of the inflammasome, including NLRP6, that is found downregulated in these animals over time. And what is one consequence, at least there is a coincidence between these phenotypes. There is increased colonization of the epithelial cells with bacteria. Bacteria from the gut microbiota is usually about 50 micrometer away from the epithelial cells, as shown here by this fluorescent labeling. This is the red is the bacteria. Here, the blue cells, the DAPI, with showing the epithelial layer, and you have a segregation of commensals from the epithelial cells, as shown here in water mice, but not in these alpha-6 mutant animals. And this is reminiscent to what we observe in ulcerative colitis patients. You have increased colonization of the epithelial layer, and that at least contribute to the risk of inflammation. In these animals, you will have a change in the gut microbiota. And this change in the gut microbiota appear over time, in the sense that before weaning, you have basically no change in the white tap and mutant mice, as shown here in the red. But after weaning, you will start to observe a change in the overall composition of the gut microbiota, suggesting that this is related to the risk of inflammation. This is a coincident phenotype with this. After weaning, you have increased risk of inflammation and you start to have these increased changes in the gut microbiota. But indeed, the microbiota composition contributes to the risk of inflammation, and to address this point, we use antibiotic treatment. And basically, what we observed is the antibiotic treated mice in blue have a decreased infiltration of CD11B cells that was observed in the mutant mice when compared to controls, and suggesting that indeed you have improved disease severity by antibiotic treatment, and it was clearly, this phenotype was clearly related to an improvement in the secretion of IL-1 beta. As shown here, you have increased IL-1 beta in the mutant mice after weaning, but not after antibiotic treatment. So clearly there is a contribution of the gut microbiota in this mice model, and there is a crosstalk between these changes in the gut epithelia and the composition, and also the adhesiveness of some commensal to the gut epithelia. What was, in terms of a mechanism, we tried a lot to understand what could be behind this phenotype, what could be the key mechanism. And what we did is to cross first these mice with Rachman mice to assess the contribution of lymphocytes, B cells or T cells. And just me explain these slides as shown here, the you have an increased macrophage influx in the gut mucosa of the mutant mice. And in the double knockout mice with alpha-6 deficiency plus RAG1 deficiency, you have no improvement of this influx of macrophages, and this is the same also with the neutrophils, suggesting that T-cells and B-cells are not required for this risk of inflammation and the risk could maybe also to the risk of dysbiosis. But the, what was very surprising is these mice, if you kept it in SPF condition over a year, you have an increased risk of colorectal cancer. As shown here, this is 100% of the mice will develop adenocarcinomas, and what is very interesting in this model, you have infiltrated adenomas as shown as observed in ulcerative colitis patients. This is basically the first model describing these infiltrating adenomas with a full penetrance in mice, and this make at least a unique model to understand the physiopathology of ulcerative colitis. And what was very interesting in these double knockout mice, RAG1 alpha 6 mice, you have now a low grade dysplasia in these animals. You have never infiltrating adenomas, suggesting that T lymphocytes and B lymphocytes are required for disease progression and up to adenoma formation. So basically, I took this picture from a recent review. Suggesting revisiting this concept of the Patzenjohn model with the mutations in the host genome, and they put in front of these changes in the host genome of the epithelia, the changes in the gut microbiota composition. And you have here, you can imagine the, all the snapshots and all the study that could be performed over time and prospective studies in order to better understand the dialogue, the crosstalk between these, the onset of some mutations, the hyperproliferation state of the epithelia, and the changes in the gut microbiota that would be give, in some circumstances, an advantage to some commensals that would trigger or promote inflammation. In this context, we next assess the role of another major predisposing genes to inflammatory bowel disease is the NOTU gene is predisposing to Crohn's disease. And what was very surprising to us is several studies showed that there is a change in the gut microbiota composition in the NOTU knockout mice, as shown here. This is a PC analysis. The red dots means the mutant mice, and the blue dots means the white-up animals. Before weaning, you have, so in white-up mice, you have a change before and after weaning in terms of composition of the gut microbiota. In the case of NOTU knockout mice, you have no change, and you have also differences between white-up mice when compared to control mutant animals. And this phenotype was observed in several groups, including the one by the paper by Patricia Lepage with Jean-Pierre Hugo and the group also of Koichi Kobayashi at the Harvard Institute, is suggesting that this single mutation contribute to a shaping, a licensing, I would say, of the composition of the gut microbiota. And this is relevant in the sense, at least for the pathophysiology, in the sense that this is a major predisposing gene for Crohn's disease. Half of the patients for Crohn's disease have a mutation in this loss of function mutation in these genes. So we assess the question whether these changes have a functional consequence on the disease risk, and whether these changes in the gut microbiota may indeed contribute to inflammation. To assess this, a talented PhD student, Aurélie Couturier, performed a fecal transplantation experiment. So basically, let me explain this this experiment. You have a germ-free recipient, white-up mice, that received a fecal specimens from white-up animals or for NOTU deficient mice. And we challenged these animals after colonization with a standard model of a colitis, experimental model of colitis, that is based on the administration of the mice to dextran sodium sulfate at 2%. And we followed over time the body weight loss or the risk of bleeding and the risk of diarrhea. And what was very surprising is all the mice that received the microbiota, the fecal microbiota from the mutant mice, have an increased risk of body weight loss with increased infiltration, increased ulcerations in the epithelia of these animals that is coincident with increased histological score. So meaning that just the microbiota per se of these animals, mutant mice, confer a risk to inflammation in this setting. This suggested us that could be we have a reverse phenomena by giving to a mutant mice a white flora. So we generated a germ-free, not too deficient recipient that received either the fecal microbiota from a white mice or fecal microbiota from a not too deficient mice. So again, you have the same color code with this gray as the mutant mice and the black as the gray as the mutant mice and the black as the white animals. And what was very interesting is all the mutant mice that receive a white flora in black have a decreased risk of colitis, basically, as just by this decreased body weight loss, decreased infiltration, and decreased histological score, suggesting that indeed you have a reversible model of a disease risk by that is influenced by the genotype and the not genotype. If you look in more in detail at the analysis of the gut microbiota composition in these mutant mice, you will clearly distinguish the animals that are more at risk to develop the disease from the ones that are resistant by this PCA analysis. And what was the minimal changes that were linked to the disease risk was a decreased abundance of some butyrate producers, Lactobacterium and Butyrate vibrio, and we are now doing experiments with Philippe Langer at the INRA to assess how these bacteria could be anti-inflammatory or could be a next generation of probiotics. At the same time, you have, coincidentally, you have an increased abundance of some bacteroidae species, and we are now screening for these bacteroidae species, isolates to assess if this is contributing to the disease risk. But we cannot exclude that this is the combination of these two changes that is at the onset of this disease risk in these animals. Similarly to the fecal transportation experiments, we perform a coursing, and we have a similar phenotype by coursing the white mice with the mutant mice, not too deficient mice, or RIP2 deficient mice. RIP2 is a kinase required for not too signaling. And so this is a scheme representing only white animals, but the housing is critical for these white animals. You have single house white animals, and the risk of colitis is minimal. If you co-house white animals with a mutant mice, then these animals have an increased risk of inflammation. And basically, this is the same phenomena as observed with littermates. Littermates, wet type littermates from a progeny with mutant animals have the same risk as the mutant one. This risk of inflammation was related to an increased tumor burden in these animals, and this is basically these co-housed wet type mice. If you follow them over time, after a 2-month period, you have an increased tumor burden in these mutant mice, in these white mice that were co-housed with the not to knockout or the RIP2 knockout. So basically, this is very interesting, suggesting a transmissibility of the risk, not only of colitis, but the risk also of colorectal cancer by this coprophagy behavior of these animals when they are co-housed with a white with the mutant mice. And as shown here with the endoscopy, you have some adenomas formation in these white mice that were co-housed with the mutant one. So this increase of colorectal cancer was related to IL-6. We tested actually several antibodies, neutralizing antibodies, to assess the mechanisms of neoplasia progression in these animals. We use anti-IL-1 beta, anti-TNF, and they were not efficient to reduce the risk of colorectal cancer in these animals. The only neutralizing antibody that was efficient in our hands was this anti-IL-6 receptor antibody, as shown here. The tumor burden is now normalized between the animals regarding to the genotype. Not two knockout mice have the similar tumor burden than the white-up mice after the treatment. Here is the endoscopy, and you see here that there is still some signs of neoplasia, but this is far reduced from the untreated animals. The most interesting observation for us was the impact of the treatment on the gut microbiota composition. This is a PCA analysis. You have again these gray dots for the mutant mice, the black dots for the white-up animals. You have a different composition of the gut microbiota according to the genotype, to the NOT2 genotype. So this is consistent with previous studies. But the most interesting is you have an impact of the treatment, IL-6 receptor treatment as shown here. These treated animals, all the treated animals actually have a change in their gut microbiota composition, suggesting that these changes in the gut microbiota may contribute to the efficiency of this treatment, and this may need to be taken into account in the development of next therapies. And actually, in our hands, in this setting, actually, the DSSOM model, we didn't see any much difference with the presence of tumors in the on the specimens where we assessed the microbiota composition when compared to the mucosa without any presence of adenomas. So basically, the take-home message is that the dysbiosis is clearly a clinically relevant readout integrating gene-environment interactions. And we are now pursuing projects to assess how novel therapeutic principle is to correct dysbiosis by discovering new probiotics. And basically, we are interested in looking at identifying probiotic strains without any NOT2 effect, in the sense that we are concerned that most of the patients with Crohn's disease have NOT2 mutations, so we want to make sure that this probiotic is functional in these patients. And at least for geneticists, this is a way to better understand the missing heritability in this disease. Only 25% of the heritability in IBD is explained by the genetic, and actually this novel concept of dysbiosis and the fact that these dysbiosis contribute to the risk is another factor that may explain this missing heritability. And now we have the same view as Dusko, as an ecological model with the way now to prevent or cure these changes in the gut microbiota composition in order to prevent the onset of the disease is to the use of probiotics, but also the use of prebiotics and bacteriotherapy, fecal transplantation, and this is start to have a preliminary clinical trials in ulcerative colitis with fecal transplantation and starts to be promising. So we now have also for colorectal cancer another way of managing the patients is this diagnosis of, to integrate this step in the management of the patient, the diagnosis of dysbiosis, and have a direct interaction with the physician and the use of antibiotics. And it was very interesting, these last papers on the efficiency of chemotherapies that is driven by the gut microbiota, and we need to take into account the use of some probiotics and actually the use of some antibiotics according to the management of these patients away from the chemotherapy to improve the efficiency of these chemotherapies. So I will finish here and thank for your attention, and I'm happy to take any questions. And I would like also to make a warm tribute to Elizabeth Joslavoles, who passed away too early.